Hello and welcome to the Decrypting Crypto podcast. It's March 28th, 2024, and this is Off-Chain, your weekly recap of the biggest stories in the crypto space. I'm Matthew Howes-Barbie, and I'm here as always with Austin Knight. We had a couple of weeks off. Austin, how you been?
Well, I'm hanging in there, Matt. Bitcoin's still up over 70K. ETH is still up over 3K. So I haven't had to sell my house just yet.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah, you can keep that, you know, garage full of Ferraris for a little while longer. this past week in particular has been, seeing up and up. There's a lot of, I feel like the ETH space in particular and everything surrounding that's getting a lot of attention now with, I feel like the odds of the ETH ETF have been swinging back and forth depending on which narrative we take on. It's certainly, you know, I've been pretty vocal on this podcast that I believe we'll have an ETH ETF. And I did predict we'll have it at the May deadline. I will admit that it's looking less and less likely that happens in May. I still think it's going to happen. I'm sticking with that. But, the odds are against it with the current push from Gary and the rest of the SEC trying to push kind of the ETH as a security notion, even though the CFTC has been pretty clear that it's a commodity in their eyes. So we'll see. As long as Big Larry is confident, I'm confident. And that's all I care about. But we got a couple of things that we're going to dig into today. Doing a bit of a deep dive. So for any of you listening that have either been playing around with, benefiting from, or have just maybe even heard in passing the huge boom around restaking, we're going to be digging into one protocol that has been kind of carving out an interesting niche for themselves within this space. And that protocol is Pendle, and it's been doing some really innovative stuff in and around restaking and the wider ecosystem that we're going to dig into. And it's a little bit hard to understand when you first at a glance. So I've been pretty deep down the rabbit hole, as won't be a surprise to many people. So I'm going to try and make sense of the madness. And then we're going to talk a little bit more after that about kind of some of the current state of the regulatory updates, especially through the lens of what the hell the SEC is up to now, and some of the updates on Coinbase. So we'll kick things off with a deep dive into Pendle. So I just want to start by saying that, brief disclaimer, have no affiliation to Pendle in any way, shape, or form. This is purely coming through the lens of someone that has been using the protocol, thinks it's interesting, and wanting to talk about it. So now we've got the brief legal disclaimer. Austin, I think our lawyers are happy enough with that, I imagine. And we can dive in. There's no shilling here, is the main thing. This is purely from an educational standpoint. So what the hell is Pendle, right? It's a really interesting DeFi protocol. It's not actually new. It's been around for a few years. I remember playing around with it in 2022. That's as far back as I remember playing around with it. Maybe it launched in the end of the last bull cycle, in and around that. It has been really growing in popularity during the kind of current liquid restaking boom. If you have no idea what I mean by that, I'm going to explain it briefly. The Pendle token is up. I mean, I looked at this last night. It was up 50% in 7 days. So that's not bad. That's not what I think is interesting about it. But that, I think, shows the interest in it. But before we dive into Pendle, let's just explain very briefly the liquid staking boom. I think we're going to do a much deeper dive on this. You've probably heard me talking about restaking as a whole, but let's just touch on this. So Eigenlayer has to be probably the most, and I don't say this lightly, I think it's probably the most anticipated launch in the Ethereum ecosystem since the launch of, you know, Ethereum itself. I don't think there's been a bigger moment that's going to come than this. It's set to hit mainnet in Q3 of this year, maybe Q2, I'm not sure. They're going to be launching their token at the same time, which I think is going to be in its own right an enormous event. And Eigenlayer is basically leading the charge, arguably created the category in restaking. So what is it? So in a nutshell, what restaking enables is new middleware projects to benefit from the security of the Ethereum validator network without having to worry about building out and, you know, incentivizing their own network of nodes. So they don't need to build out all of this crazy infrastructure, launch a bunch of tokens, just they still can launch tokens, but as a new kind of crypto project, I don't need to worry about if I'm building a layer two roll up or something that I have to incentivize a load of these like node operators to run their own separate nodes. You can just tap into the existing validator set of the Ethereum network and kind of like, I like to think of this as almost like treating Eigenlayer almost like software as a service is for like regular startups, where you can just, you know, tap into AWS, right, for your cloud services versus building out your own cloud provider. Instead, you're just tapping into Eigenlayer to then be able to kind of pull in the validator set from Ethereum to have economic security of your own chain versus building it all out from scratch, which in itself is kind of a crazy, crazy thing to actually do every single time. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the deep detail of this today, but the net here for the people actually staking via Eigenlayer. So you can restake your ETH, right? So what this means is if you are already running an ETH validator, you can then point your ETH validator to Eigenlayer, and Eigenlayer then controls this. And what you will get in return is that you will earn additional yield on top of like the regular ETH staking yield. So I think like ETH staking yield is somewhere in the region of like 3.5%, probably max right now, that validators will get. You know, Eigenlayer will then give some additional yield on top of that, which is paid for by all of these kind of middleware projects, which are known as AVSs, and actively validated services, I believe that's called. And they're kind of paying almost like, you know, their SaaS subscription fee, their rent fee, and that gets passed on to restakers. All you need to know is this is a big deal. And this is illustrated by the fact that Eigenlayer has accumulated over 12 billion in TVL, and it hasn't even launched yet. So
now, Matt, yeah. for like folks that are listening, is this only would Eigenlayer only be relevant to folks that are directly staking on the network with the 32 ETH minimum? Or if they're staking through a service like Lido, for example, is there some way to layer Eigenlayer on top of that? How does that work?
It's a great question. So there's two ways that people can do this, right? And the first way is, yeah, if you're running an Ethereum validator, 32 ETH minimum, and you can point that at Eigenlayer, your withdrawal address, and effectively that's like the simplest way. There's no barriers to stopping you do that. You can do that with as many validators as you like today. The other way of doing this, to your point, is using like a liquid staking token, right? And things like Lido's STETH, or Rocket Pool's RETH, or Frax's FRX ETH. And they don't have a 32 ETH minimum. The only thing is, and the caveat here, is that Eigenlayer wanted to try and incentivize more that actual validators would do this versus through an additional layer of liquid restaking tokens. So they put caps on the amount of liquid staking tokens, like, you know, Lido staked ETH, that could actually deposit into Eigenlayer. And they only have like, they increase the cap. It maxes out in like a few minutes, and then it's like another month or two before they do this. So yes, the answer is yes, Austin, you can do it via liquid staking tokens, but the opportunity to do that is much more challenging to actually be able to do it. But that,
okay, wow. So they've pulled in 12 billion in total volume, with I'm assuming the majority of that being folks that are running a validator with a minimum of 32 ETH directly on the network. That's
so here,
crazy.
So yes and no. So here's okay. Here's why I think this has got really interesting, right? And it's actually perfectly ties in for to what you were just asking as well. So EigenLayer, to incentivize getting all of this like value locked in there. In that protocol, and by the way, 12 billion is a huge amount. It'd be like, I think on ETH, I think actually only Lido has more TVL, right? So, and it's not by much more either. So it'd be like one of the highest TVLs of any kind of protocol anywhere on any blockchain. It's an enormous amount of capital. Now, how do they incentivize this? So they did a couple of things. And then I'll get to my point around that I'm going to talk about with these validators, right? Is they incentivize this because they're not even live yet. So they're not actually able to pass on this additional like staking yield because no one's actually technically using EigenLayer on mainnet yet. What they did instead is they've set up a point system. You know, we love point systems that for the amount of ETH that you are restaking through EigenLayer, you earn eigenpoints, which will at the time of their launch translate into eigentokens. At what ratio we have no idea, but it's going to be a big airdrop. Hence lots of people, myself included, farming these points with validators. Now it's not, to your point, very easy to run a validator. It first of all requires 32 ETH, which is six figures of cash right now. But also there's the technical component as well, which is, it's not super straightforward. So when staking first arrived on ETH, this was the same challenge. It was like, well, we need all these people running validators. It's like, well, it's quite, you know, there's a barrier when it comes to economics here. People need to be able to afford 32 ETH. And then they also need the technical knowledge to do it. And there came the likes of Lido, right? That said, hey, we're going to simplify this for you. Deposit any amount of ETH. No, don't worry about the 32 ETH. And we will give you a liquid staking token in return. So you have one ETH, you get one staked ETH. And you can deposit that and yield will accrue into this one staked ETH for you. But you don't need to worry about running a validator. And what they're doing in the background, though, is they are just, you know, every time they get 32 ETH deposited into Lido, they're spinning up a validator and running it natively. Mm-hmm. And then they pass on the staking fees, staking rewards to their Lido staked ETH holders and take a little cut. Of the themselves. Now what we're seeing, right, is with restaking, we're seeing liquid restaking platforms appearing, which is basically doing for what Lido did for kind of native ETH staking, but for EigenLayer restaking. And this, when you explain it like this, it's like, wait, is this like a giant Ponzi? It's actually a good thing for the network. It is actually a good thing for the network, because the only downside to this is, so when you think about like diversity of validators, is it a good thing that the majority of validators on the ETH network are ran by Lido? No. Is it a good thing that we have so many validators running on the network and that wouldn't have existed without the likes of Lido and others? Yes, right? It provides like stability and economic security. So now we have restaking liquid platforms like Etherfi is the biggest. You also have Puffer, Renzo, and a bunch of these others. And what they are doing is kind of a similar thing, but for EigenLayer. So for example, with Etherfi, you can just deposit any amount of ETH. And what they're doing is they're spinning up ETH validators and restaking them via EigenLayer for you, but you don't have to worry about the minimum. And here's what's happening, right? So they're gathering billions of dollars in TVL themselves. I think Etherfi has like 2 or 3 billion in TVL, which is wild, right? And what they're doing here to incentivize people to do that is they pass on proportionally those eigenpoints that you would have gained, but you know, proportional to your stake of ETH that you've restaked through that. And then they're also offering their own points alongside this, right? So like Etherfi points or Puffer points, that when they launch their own token, Etherfi actually recently launched their own token and has been a huge breakout success, massive airdrops that people got. So that they are the first and I think only one in the big liquid restaking sector to actually launch their own token right now. All the others are doing the same thing, point system, so that people are restaking through them. And ultimately, the more ETH you stake, the more points you get. The more points you get, the larger the airdrop you get. And, you know, if Etherfi's recent airdrops anything to go by, these can be very, very lucrative. So that's kind of like, that's the restaking space right now. And when we get past all this like point stuff and airdrop stuff, right, it's like actually just what you'll get from restaking is an additional yield. You may go from that 3% native staked ETH to closer to maybe 6.5%, maybe 7%. So, you know, there's additional stuff that comes into this. So, where does Pendle come in? You thought that was confusing. Wait till we get to Pendle. This is where things get real interesting. And this really plays into this whole, like, you know, people doing the math of the ETH yield points and what that might mean in terms of potential upside for an airdrop and et cetera, et cetera. Pendle has kind of jumped on this liquid restaking token narrative and have provided a really pretty cool and interesting way to gain exposure to the restaking frenzy. So there's three kind of ways that they offer this. So they have their yield tokens, YT, principal tokens, known as PT, and then they also have like a liquidity pool between these liquid restaking tokens and the PT version of them, right? So I'm going to start with yield tokens, the YT ones, because this is like the wildest higher risk area, which I think is still very interesting. So for each of the different liquid restaking tokens, for example, with Etherfi, they have ETH, right? Puffer, they have Puff ETH, right? You can purchase one of Pendle's yield tokens. And what these look like, right? So let's just use Etherfi as an example. The Etherfi yield token is called YTEETH. So it's like yield token for Etherfi ETH, right? Just so we clarify that. And they have these for each of the different restaking platforms that they support. These are fixed maturity assets that offer leveraged exposure to the underlying asset. So what does that mean, right? So let's say I deposit one ETH into the YT. Let's say I deposit one ETH, right? Etherfi ETH into the Y, and what I'll get back is somewhere in the region of between 10 to 12 YT ETH. You're basically getting like 10 to 12x leverage, which means for every one ETH that you put in, you're getting 10 to 12x the points that you would have achieved. It's basically as if you're depositing 12 ETH into Etherfi instead of just the one. You're leveraging up. That sounds pretty interesting because you can get 12 times the points, 12 times the airdrop size. Here's the kicker. At the maturity date of these, like, as I mentioned, they're fixed maturity assets, your ETH that you deposited will be worth zero. So effectively, like, and you can withdraw it at any time for a proportional, like, market rate of this, which it will degrade more and more and more as it gets towards the maturity date. What you're doing by purchasing one of these yield tokens is you're effectively making, like, a leveraged bet that the yield that you get from these like points, that the airdrop ultimately will be worth more than the cost of leverage. And the cost of leverage, right, for one ETH deposit is one ETH, because at the end, the maturity date, it becomes zero. So what you're banking on is like, yeah, go ahead.
So basically what's happening here is Pendle is taking that one ETH and holding it, right? And keeping it in the end. And you're making a bet saying by the maturity date, these 10 to 12 leveraged YT tokens will be worth more than this one ETH that I'm putting in. Is it as simple as that?
Well, the points that you accrue in EtherFi will be worth more, right? Because the YT tokens, right, that, I mean, they basically go to zero as well at the maturity date. And that maturity date, like, I think the most recent one is like June 27th. Usually they're like 3 or 4 months. So you've got this, like, basically you push this in, you've got like 10, 12x leverage on your ETH, and it's going to go to zero. Basically, the math is, by the time you get to the maturity date, will the airdrop that you get from the points you accrued from holding these tokens be worth more than the cost of that one ETH, basically, is what you're saying, right? Because your ETH is going to zero by the end of the maturity date. You're going to accrue like 12 times the points that you would have accrued if you'd have just held your ETH and kept it at the end, right? Like, so are the points going to be worth more? And
I mean, where does all of this money come from then? Like, what's going to make the points be worth more?
So here's so they're taking out leverage on this. And this is where you have some of these other assets, right? So let's talk about some of these other assets. So you have the kind of inverse of the YT token are the principal tokens, which is PT. And what these are super interesting. This is almost if you have like the reverse perspective. These are also fixed maturity assets, but they trade at a discount to ETH. So let me actually start that sentence again, right? These are fixed maturity assets. They trade at a discount to the price of ETH, but at their maturity can be redeemed with zero discount to like the net asset value of ETH. So I know that's like a lot of words, but I'll explain that with an example in a second. The only thing with this is you actually forego the underlying yield of ETH and the points that you would accrue. So you're not earning any points. Instead, you're basically buying ETH or ETH at a discount. And at the maturity date, you get a fixed yield on that. And what is being given to Pendle is like all of the points, right? So it's kind of like the reverse of these. So for example, let's say you deposit one ETH. And I looked at this today, right? In, I think it was the EtherFi one, right? So if you deposit one ETH, you'll get 1.1 PT ETH, right? The maturity date of this is currently June 27th. On that date, you will redeem that 1.1 PT ETH for 1.1 ETH. So you get a fixed yield. It's like a fixed coupon, right, of 0.1 ETH. The trade-off is you get zero Eigen points, you get zero EtherFi points for holding this. So you're taking out kind of these PT ETHs with the view of, I don't care about these points, and that's almost what I'm using as my like payment, and I just care more about accruing more ETH. And I believe that that's going to have a higher value than the points I would have gained, right, for this stuff. So that you've got the PT and then you've got the YT, which are like different. And then what you've got here, right? And to be clear on the YT one, the yield token one, you know, you're paying for the leverage that you're taking out with the cost of your ETH. So the third bucket in all of this is if you want to be a liquidity provider. This is kind of like the middle ground in the two. So you can be a liquidity provider in the, let's say, for example, in the EtherFi one again, because they're for all of these different liquid restaking platforms. You can be a liquidity provider for the EETH and the PTETH pool. So anytime someone is doing a swap between PTETH and their EETH, you earn a percentage of the swap fees between those assets. And then what you're doing is you're basically getting half, you're depositing half of your position into PTETH, half of the position into EETH so that you can basically facilitate trades between the two. But you also benefit from the fixed yield, actually, on the PTETH side. I know we're getting into the real, real minutia here. And on the other side of your liquidity provision, which is held in EETH, you're earning points. So you're kind of like getting half fixed yield, half EtherFi points, and you're earning a percentage of swap fees. So the other nice thing that's happening is for many of these, like EtherFi, for example, they offer 2x EtherFi points to anyone that engages in these liquidity pools. So then you're actually, that half of your points that you would have got is just the same as if you'd have held a full portion of ETH. And then you also get like Pendle rewards on top of that. So there's like, you know, as far as being a liquidity provider where you're trying to get like the best of both worlds of like this points farming and also making a yield on ETH, it's been pretty good. Now, I'm just going to caveat all of this with, these are complex derivatives, right? You should only play with these if you understand the risks involved, which obviously include the smart contract risk, right, of both Pendle and these LRT, these liquid restaking token issuers. That said, it is super interesting to dig into them. I will say, if you just look at the performance of the EtherFi ones of these, because we've had the token launch, so we know now in retrospect how much the points were. In looking at that, these like YT tokens, if you went in and gained exposure via these like yield tokens, you would have made a pretty substantial profit despite your ETH going to zero at the maturity day. I think like the liquidity pool providers, which I was one of those, you could make a pretty substantial. I think I was in a liquidity provider on the EtherFi, the EETH and PTETH pool. And I think my total yield was somewhere in the region of like 10% over a space of 2.5 months, which is pretty good. And then I got, I'm not including like the airdrop from EtherFi and all that stuff. So it's super interesting. This is like super hyper composability and can seem like it's just crazy hyper leverage stuff. But when you actually pull this back, it's you actually know where all the yield is coming from. It's just quite complex and you're making bets on the future value of stuff. But I actually just love seeing stuff like this because it just says to me, like more than anything, what can be made possible in DeFi, which just can't take place in like the traditional finance world. And I think what the Pendle team are doing is super interesting and has been exciting to play around in.
Yeah, it's really wild. So something that I'm wondering is like, how does Pendle benefit from this? How do they make money from this? Because the yield tokens, it seems like you're basically making the bet that the points will go up greater than the ETH. With the principal tokens, it seems like you're kind of making the inverse bet, which is that the ETH will grow at a rate of, I guess, effectively 10% by the maturity date, and that will be greater than the value growth of the points.
Exactly.
And then when you're the liquidity provider, it seems like you're kind of just the person that wins no matter what.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the liquidity, the liquidity provider is like the best deal in this, right? Like, but you are providing a real service to Pendle here, right?
They need that's a very nice liquidity. Way to see yourself, Mr. Banker Matt.
and I think, you know, they need that liquidity. Otherwise, you know, how are people can't get in and out of the PT tokens. And that's the key here. Mm-hmm. That said, so how are Pendle making fee? Well, first of all, let's start with the liquidity pools, right? They will also take as a liquidity provider, you get a percentage of the swap fees. Pendle gets all the rest. So they're getting swap fees on this. Now, they are also paying you out in like Pendle rewards. I will say the Pendle rewards were relatively small. So I imagine they're smaller than the swap fees. So I think that they would have a net profitable position on the liquidity pools. Now, on the yield tokens, you're paying for your leverage in the price of the ETH that you deposit, because that is going to zero at the maturity date. But I mean, it's not going to zero for Pendle, right? Because, you know, they keep that ETH. That's the cost of you basically borrowing this like 10x leverage, which they're providing. So they could have a profitable piece there. And then on the principal token, the PT stuff, yeah, basically they're paying out this fixed yield on ETH, which, you know, they keep and benefit from with the Etherfi and eigenpoints and stuff off the back of it. So it's like a lot of different ways. That one is actually, I'm less sure whether they pass those points on through some other, like, they play a role elsewhere in this whole, like, construct, or whether they just actually cash those in. But that's the mm-hmm. one piece that I'm not so sure on how Pendle benefit directly from it. But I think that they just get the points, and that's where they can basically hedge their exposure on the YT piece as well.
And what makes the points go up in value is just more people buying in, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the points themselves relate to ultimately like how many tokens you will get from Etherfi, from Puffer, from etc. when they launch their token. And then, you know, then it's just price discovery. But there's a lot of really interesting stuff right now that's happened with these pre-markets that have been opening up around points, where there's one called whales.market. So if you go in there, you can kind of see people are actually trying to, I guess, make a guess on the value of a single point. And you can actually buy people's points ahead of the token drop. And, you know, you're doing, it's almost like a pre-market futures contract, if you like, right, for these points, which is in itself super interesting. So you can kind of use those early valuations, you know, as somewhat of a proxy to trying to guess at this stuff. It's never going to be perfect, but at least you can get, you know, a secondary market rate, at least for it, and then kind of go from there. So it's very interesting. And I think, you know, this point stuff is going to happen more and more because it enables airdrops to happen, which are ultimately the most regulatory, I don't want to say compliant, I just want to say like the safest regulatory path to take for a token issuer today. And it's what also helps drive incentivization for a lot of these protocols, helps them decentralize as well by launching a governance token. So yeah, I mean, it's obviously a frenzy. People need to be careful. If most of this went completely over your head, that's probably the sign that you shouldn't play around with this stuff. If this helped you understand it as a listener and you want to learn more, and but you're still a little bit on the fence, play with very small amounts and just get exposure. Do like the liquidity, be a liquidity provider, or just like, you know, if for example, 0.5 ETH isn't an enormous amount to you, I don't know for anyone, let's say that isn't an enormous amount, put that into the YT kind of deposit that to get YT version of the LRT token and play around and see what happens, right? You know, this is a good place to just learn how the mechanics of this all works, but know that things can obviously go to zero. So yeah, but it's a fun one. All right, let's zoom out. Let's zoom out of the depths of DeFi and jump into the wonderful world of regulation. Let's jump into the next story of the day.
Woo, come up for a breath of air. We were just down at the depths of the DeFi ocean. And now we're going to talk about something much, much less complex, and that's the SEC.
Oh, simple, simple stuff.
Yes. So I wanted to do a little bit of a legal roundup because the SEC is up to its tricks again. And also, it's been a while since I've talked about a certain someone, so I'll save that for the end. I couldn't resist, Matt. All right, so the SEC, they have a lawsuit against Coinbase. Coinbase submitted a motion to dismiss the case. Turns out the case is moving forward. A federal judge overseeing the SEC's lawsuit against Coinbase ruled that the case can proceed, They feel that the SEC's arguments against Coinbase are largely plausible. And in doing so, they denied Coinbase's motion to dismiss the case. Now, it's important to note, this wasn't a judgment. It's not really indicative of what the outcome of the case is going to be. It simply means that the judge feels that there is plausible evidence that a law has been violated. Still, the judge did indicate support for the SEC's general argument about crypto, which is, and they've been talking about this for a while, and everybody's nervous about it, which is the claim that many tokenized assets constitute securities schemes and fall under the SEC's purview. That's basically what the SEC has been going after for a while. And the judge in this decision said, quote, "The crypto nomenclature may be of recent vintage, but the challenge transactions fall comfortably within the framework the courts have used to identify securities for nearly 80 years. Now, I found this really interesting because when this case was first filed and initial discovery was happening, the judge didn't really seem to be that sympathetic to the SEC. Recently, she changed her tone. And you can see that coming through here in that she allowed the case to proceed on 2 out of 3 of the claims that were made by the SEC against Coinbase. The first claim, which was allowed, is that Coinbase operates as an unregistered securities exchange for retail and institutional investors. That's the big one. The second one, which was also allowed, is that Coinbase's crypto staking programs constitute additional offerings of unregistered securities. And then the third one, which was dismissed, is that via the Coinbase wallet, the company conducts brokerage activity. Now, that one doesn't really help Coinbase because the other claims are the big ones. And those are actually the ones that are more of a concern for the broader crypto industry. And on that note, buried within the 84-page judgment was a rejection of Coinbase's claim that the SEC has violated federal law by failing to disclose its crypto policy. I'll quote, "The SEC is not announcing a new regulatory policy, but rather is simply engaging in a fact-intensive application of an existing standard, an application that Coinbase also conducted to determine whether certain transactions involving crypto assets meet the characteristics of an investment contract." Okay, so that's the thing where this gets bigger than Coinbase, right? These claims that potentially these tokenized assets do constitute security schemes and that they're under the SEC's purview, and the fact that this judge seems to be coming a little bit more open to that potential. So that's what's happening with Coinbase. We're going to have to keep a close eye on that one because, you know, I mean, we've talked about this a million times, Matt. Coinbase is the entity one of a handful of entities, but I would say definitely as far as the U.S. is concerned and the U.S. regulatory scheme is concerned, it's the entity that has been trying to comply the most and trying to behave and asking the SEC, like, hey, just tell us what you want and we'll comply with it. We want regulation. We want good regulation, transparent regulation, clear regulation, not regulation through enforcement.
Yeah, and I think that's like, you know, Coinbase, ourselves over at Kraken, and any of the other US-based exchanges, right? It's like, that has been like the mantra here. It's a bit different when you're an offshore exchange and, you know, you can skirt around things a little bit more than this, at least for now. I think, you know, also Coinbase are first. You know, they were first to receive a Wells notice. They're first in court. Everyone's going to have their day in, and think everyone's in the crypto space is rooting for Coinbase in this for sure. I do think one of the things around the Coinbase wallet claim being dismissed is actually quite significant for the crypto space as a whole. Ultimately, you know, it was a nonsense claim in the first place, but does really kind of just draw a line under the non-custodial holding of assets and DeFi as a whole being kind of out of the purview to a certain extent, which is key. But yeah, I agree with you that there seems to be a slight change in the openness to listen to the SEC's arguments. It's going to go to trial. This is going to be a big one, and all eyes are going to be on it for sure.
Yeah. And hey, surprise, surprise, the SEC is also suing Ripple Labs for $2 billion.
They haven't had enough medicine.
They're on a tear. They continue to be on a tear. Ripple Labs' chief legal officer made a preemptive announcement about this via X. Going hard, man. It's a wild time. He said, quote, "As you will see when the SEC's brief is made public tomorrow, they asked the judge for $2 billion in fines and penalties." And then he continued to say, "The SEC, quote, trades in statements that are false, mischaracterized, and designed to mislead. They want to, quote, punish and intimidate Ripple and the industry at large." Now,
do you think they'd take the $2 billion? Do you think they'd take the $2 billion in ETH?
Yeah,
I bet they would. You know,
something tells me they'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
So you may be sitting there and thinking to yourself, "Wait a second, Ripple Labs, $2 billion. Wasn't Ripple Labs already being sued by the SEC?" Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be right. This legal battle between Ripple and the SEC has been ongoing since 2020. Originally, they were hit with a $1.3 billion lawsuit alleging they sold unregistered securities in the form of XRP. But last year, Ripple scored a partial win when a judge ruled that programmatic sales of XRP to retail investors did not qualify as securities. They still, there were still $700 million or so dollars in question that had to be resolved. Mm-hmm. So it was a partial win, but this was an important part of that partial win. And that lawsuit is still ongoing. So it comes without surprise that Ripple's CEO has been pretty vocal about this. He recently called the SEC, quote, "very hostile," and said that SEC Chairman Gary Gensler was a, quote, "political liability," and that his way of regulating the crypto industry wasn't working. That's a controversial statement to say when the SEC is, has its eyes on you. But I think in the broader landscape and in the broader court of public opinion, not too controversial of a thing to say.
Yeah.
It's been a wild time.
It really has. It really, really has. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Last but not least, place your bets. How much prison time is SBF gonna get?
we should have had some custom sound effect for this, like a game show. We're not high budget enough. Maybe when we get into the absolute peak of the bull market, we can invest in those things. Oh man!
All right, so this is kind of fun. SBF is being sentenced today, any minute now. He faces a maximum of 110 years. Prosecutors have asked for 40 to 50 years. On Polymarket, over $1.2 million has been bet on his sentencing length.
Dark, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it really is. Right now, the number one position is 20 to 30 years with an 86% likelihood of a payout. Number two, 30 to 40 years with a 50% likelihood. Three, 10 to 20 years with a 27% likelihood. Four, 5 to 10 years with a 24% likelihood. And then fifth place is 40 to 50 years with a 23% likelihood. Importantly, less than 5 years is the least likely bet. And that has a 6% likelihood of payout. Now, as we are recording this, I've been sitting here refreshing my feed. And he has been sentenced.
Oh, so I don't actually know. So I don't actually. But what I will say is, before you reveal this to me, and I'll take a guess before I look, I believe, and maybe in a few seconds I'll be proved wrong, but I don't think I will. I believe that it's going to be a large sentence, and I think that this is going to be the clearest example of where the US and actually largely like most like Western like legal systems are broken. Like the average sentence for a murderer is 7 years. And I think if you actually believe that prison is around reform, like sentencing someone who has literally murdered someone and is like categorically a danger to society in that respect for 7 years, and then even considering somewhere in the region of, 20 years in my mind, for Sam Bankman-Fried, who, just to be clear, I really dislike this person, and I think they've done horrendous things, and they've ruined a lot of people's lives. But my personal take is that, honestly, anything above 10 years here is kind of crazy, like for like this kind of crime, when I compare it to crimes that I would deem as requiring much longer sentencing to facilitate rehabilitation. From my perspective, like, and I'm getting a bit on a soapbox here, but like, you know, white collar crimes are much easier to prevent from the same individual by just making their life really difficult after prison, right? Like, you know, just putting huge restrictions on their ability to partake in certain like financial like services, like have like limitations placed on like where they can transact, not allowing them to be like, you know, go down certain career paths. Those are the things that I think we should be doing. So I'm getting off my soapbox. What do I think he's going to get? I think he's going to get 25 years. And that will be my guess. So you now tell me he's got 5 years, Austin, and that all of that will look
my,
like...
My God, Matt, was that a genuine guess? Are you for real right now?
I swear on my daughter's life, I have not seen anything. Have I nailed it? Bang on.
You nailed it. 25 years.
I don't want to celebrate a man going to prison for 25 years, but I want to take a win where I can take a win. I don't know how you feel on this, Austin. Maybe you have very different opinions, but I just feel like it's fucking crazy. Like, it's just, I feel it's kind of broken, the whole system. I will say, though, I wonder if he'll probably feel, maybe I'd feel good about that if I was SBF, considering what he was facing up to. Time served.
I think he's going to feel all right about it. I mean,
yeah, because time served, it's going to be less than that, surely, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was facing a maximum of 110. That's the figure that was being thrown around. Prosecutors were asking
110. Like, what? It's wild, really, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, to me, like, I'll be honest with you, I don't feel bad about him serving 25 years and also knowing that he'll probably actually serve less than that because, on the point about murder sentences being 7 years, I actually wasn't aware of that. It's a great statistic.
It's crazy, right?
I mean, my initial reaction to that is like, wow, we need to pump that number up, baby. Like, come on, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that we need to give, like, white-collar crimes at immense scale that have absolutely wrecked people's lives shorter sentences. And that's the main reason for that being not that I think that we couldn't control SBF. To your point, like this type of a crime, it's like, okay, the guy doesn't get an internet connection for the rest of his life. Like, you know, let him play baseball or whatever it is that he likes to do. But the problem is that there's a deterrence component to it, you know? And
I guess you view prison, right? It's like, this is like more philosophical. It's like, do we view prison as punishment or do we view it as rehabilitation? And I that's where I think this gets like really challenged. Like, what is the purpose that prison actually serves? Like, if it's punishment, is this actually the most effective way to punish people? Like, I don't know the answer to that question, but it's
I'm saying is that there's a social component to it, which is like if you let somebody get away with something easily, then it invites others to do it as well, you know?
Absolutely.
So, like, I don't think that, you know, I guess I'm not a huge fan of, like, the idea of punishment, you know, being a function of prison. And now we are getting philosophical here. But I do have to imagine, and you could say this is petty, but, like, I wasn't one of the people that lost money in FTX. But I've listened to, you know, a lot of people speak who did lose money in FTX. And, like, I think they want punishment, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, know? For sure. People want punishment. The mob will want their you know, their pound of flesh. Whether that is necessarily the right thing or not, I don't know. And look, I know my opinion here will be very unpopular to a large group of people. I just think I would guess though that most people will side with me in the fact that, you know, the prison sentencing system is broken, for sure. And it's a problem, but Yeah, I think probably the reason why I guessed 25 years is when I just thought about, you know, what number is most likely to make most both sides relatively happy and move on. And I think that's about the perfect sweet spot for it, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and to be honest, I'm just going to be glad to not hear his name again for a long time. So that's at least one good thing. Until his book comes out.
I'm going to be telling you all about what he's up to in prison when he's writing his rap album and everything.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, I can't wait. The comeback tour is going to be it's going to slap. Well, this one got deep on many, many levels, but I feel like it was a good episode. We dug into Rex, we dug into DeFi, and of course ended with everybody's favorite person in the crypto space. We'll let that one all simmer. If anyone has any questions about some of the stuff that we were talking about today, outside of the philosophical debate, of course, make sure you tweet us. We'll always be happy to dig in. And Austin, as always, we'll see you next week.
Talk to you then, Matt.
The contents of the Decrypting Crypto podcast should not be used and are not intended as investment advice. Please do your own due diligence before making any investment, cryptocurrency or otherwise.